James Bond is back. We are the Spyfy guys, and this is From Russia with Love. Hello and welcome back to the Spyfy guys, where we cover spy facts, spy fiction, and everything in between. I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And today we are back with the second Sean Connery James Bond 007 movie, From Russia with Love. Of course, this is not the first James Bond movie we've covered on the Spyfy guys. Far from it. I've never let it be said we do anything traditionally.
Although, we are actually going in order with the Connery films so far, because we covered Dr. No, and that's the only, to my memory, the only one that we've covered of his movies. So we're going with his second film right now. And yes. Don't forget, we've also covered the video game version of this back last year for our James Bond Day special.
Yes, that was very helpful. And before we get back into the movie, I want to say we may have something exciting to announce. We're not ready to do it yet, but please follow our social media at the Spyfy Guys or all your various socials. If there's something to announce, you will see it there first.
What a tease, Zach.
That's me. Just call me James Bond. But anyway, yeah, Christian, so how much of From Russia with Love did you remember before we watched this?
Quite well. I mean, so not only was I watching the movie, I was also reading the book alongside. I'll have in our Spy Fact vs. Fiction some interesting differences. I did also listen to the BBC put out an audio drama version of this. So it was one of those things where they sort of have different people reading out different characters. And yeah, so which is about an hour and a half long, was narrated by, James Bond was played by Toby Stevens, who was the villain from Die Another Day. He also read the audiobook version of the one that I read. So I'm quite familiar with the plot of this one. In addition to, of course, the video game that we covered, I did want to ask you this. Playing the video game, did that help you understand the movie more, or did watching the movie kind of help you understand what was going on in the video game more?
So I actually think the video game made the movie not as easy to understand, just because there's so much stuff. But the game was helpful for remembering. Oh, I remember this from the game. Oh, I remember this from the game. Uh-huh. So from what I remembered before I played the game was little flashes. Okay. I remembered pretty much the whole movie takes place on a train. And I remember
that's
Rose
really
the Clown's
about
knife
half,
fight.
But sure.
Yeah, well, in my memory, it was the whole movie. And then I also remember Rosa Klebb's knife foot.
Yeah, well, funny you mentioned it's on a train. So I actually did watch a majority of this, actually, including most of the train stuff, while I was on a train. So it was a fun sort of, real life mirroring, what I was doing, or movies mirroring what I was doing in real life. So that was fun.
It's like a 4DX experience.
kind of, yeah. All right, shall we get into it then?
Yeah, so as always, we have our plot synopses. We'll begin with poetry synopses, and of those, we will start with the haiku. An obvious trap. Belly dancing is sexy. Look out, a chopper!
All right.
And then we have, I was waiting for a reaction that never came. And then we have our limerick summary of From Russia with Love. There once was an agent from Spectre whose job was to pick up a Lecter. When he opened the case, it blew up in his face. Now his funeral needs a director.
nice. Except, I'll have a minor correction to that. It wasn't the Lecter that blew up in his face.
Well, I said when he opened the case.
I guess it could
be implied that it was the Lecter's case.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair play. All right.
So anyway,
here's
the real IMDb plot summary. James Bond willingly falls into an assassination plot involving a naive Russian beauty in order to retrieve a Soviet encryption device that was stolen by Spectre.
All right. Pretty good. So we start the film with the James Bond gun barrel, as usual. Dr. No, goes from gun barrel to title sequence directly. But this is the first time we actually get that pre-title sequence. And we've got James Bond, Sean Connery, in a hedge maze. And he's, lurking around, being stalked by this big blonde, brute, who kills him with a garrote that's hidden in a watch.
So this, I was like, oh yeah, the game. I remember this from the game. Something notable about this, Christian, is it's the only time we see James Bond wearing a tuxedo in the movie.
True. That is very true. Yep. Although it is not James Bond.
Right. Yes, that's the reveal. And actually, my girlfriend, who I was watching this, noticed, wait a minute, something's wrong with his face. It looks like it's made out of wax or something.
They They did something to his face to make it look more waxy, so make you think, oh, there's something off there. But,
yeah, it makes
but,
sense.
Yeah,
so, of course, this kind of sets off a can of worms.
Oh.
In, like, a world building, because, like, if Spectre had a mask that was able to make someone look exactly like James Bond, you'd
Except
think they'd be have
not
somewhere...
exactly, because...
Well, similar, yeah.
It is similar, yes. But also, I mean, that may come into play in future James Bond films.
None that I remember. So that'll be intriguing.
There's one that I will we'll talk about when we get to it. Yeah, so there's a mask that's pulled off. It's revealed that it's not Sean Connery, James Bond. This is some other dude. And this was all just a training exercise.
It is funny how in the training exercise, they have James Bond wearing a tuxedo. Like,
well, they know that's what his trademark is, at least. Or is it? There's only been one film.
I know, crazy, right? Well, like I mentioned when we watched Dr. No, it was interesting how so many of the tropes had been so firmly established one movie in. Though in this one, it's a little rougher around the edges, which is something I kind of like about it.
Interesting. Interesting you say that. So we'll come back to that. But yeah, so this is all a training exercise for, we find out his name later is Red Grant, played by, goodness, what's his name? Guy from Jaws? He's in Jaws.
Not Jaws.
He is not Jaws. He is... Oh, Robert Shaw.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's cool. I didn't even recognize him.
Yeah, he always looks different in his roles. We had the pre-title sequence. Now we get the title sequence with... Oh, I assume this is what the belly dance... I was like, the belly dancer was like only in one scene in my memory. So I was like, oh, wait, it was the title sequence. That's what you're talking about, wasn't it?
Well, also, it's a very memorable scene. That was one of the only other things I remembered from the movie way back when I saw it. But this and this opening is what I mean about it's a little rougher. There's no original theme song. It's the James
That's
Bond
true.
Theme,
yeah.
Just like in Doctor Who.
Well, no. It's the James Bond theme mixed with an instrumental of From Russia with Love.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then, whereas normally the opening has women, guns, and martinis, this one's just a woman.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, yeah, like you said, they were still trying to figure out the formula. This is actually not done by Maurice Binder, who did almost all of them up until License to Kill. This and Goldfinger were done by another guy whose name I forget.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed in the opening that one of the actors was just Layla, no last name.
Oh.
It made me think it was like a dog, like Layla the dog who went into space. But no, that's the belly dancer's name.
That's Laika is the dog who went to space, not Layla.
Yes, thank you.
All right, so we have designer Robert Brown John is the person who did the credits for this and Goldfinger.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, Maurice Binder did everything else. So he sort of took what Brown John created with this, and especially Goldfinger, and really accentuated. But yeah, so you're right. Yeah, it's almost there, but not quite there in terms of the tropes.
Mm.
So we next go to a chess match where we see Kronstein, who we find out is a Spectre agent, playing against another guy. He gets a note in his on the napkin of his water. It's like, you are needed immediately. So he, like, even though it seems to be a very tense match, immediately wins and goes to the meeting.
So is the idea that he was just playing? No pun intended, with his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was going to, resign immediately. But instead, he just wins.
No. Yep. So we go to a Spectre meeting on a boat. This is the first time we meet Ernst Stavro Blofeld and establish the trope of him never being seen except from, his hands and his cat.
And don't forget the cat. But isn't he just number one? He doesn't have a name, right?
You're right. He only has a number one. I don't.
And I'm not. Trying to be funny here. I actually want to know who is number two. Get it?
We will find out in a couple movies.
Okay. Did you get where I was going with that?
Yes, I got that.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and we'll get to it when we get to Thunderball.
It's so far away, though.
Because we do meet number three and number seven. Number three being Rosa Klebb. And then number seven. I believe his number seven is Kronstein.
Mm.
Now, Rosa Klebb is Russian. She used to work for Smersh.
Right, which we've discussed many times here on the Spotify guys.
Just once. We'll talk about it later. Anyway, so they have a meeting. They have a whole plot of basically they're going to steal this Lecter machine and they're going to use British intelligence as their weapon to do so, and result also get revenge for the killing of their agent Dr. No.
Ah, a little bit of continuity, but you don't need to have actually seen Dr. No to understand that.
Nope. This is the first of the tropes of, all right, we're gonna do something and pit, the West and the East against each other.
Yeah, I like it. It's more clever than let's just steal a nuclear bomb and hold the world at ransom yet again.
I'm gonna count how many times that's actually happened in a film, because it's not that many.
Don't even remember what Dr. No was doing last time. He wanted to mess
Dr.
up
No
some
was
kind of
using,
missile, right?
he was toppling, toppling, what was it? Oh, yes, US rockets. Anyways, so we go next to Spectre Island, which, sounds fun, and it's a whole training site for Spectre agents and assassins. And we again meet Red Grant. This is where we find out that he's going to be recruited into this plot as well.
So this is cool. I have a few thoughts. First,
All
we're
right.
spending a lot of time with the bad guys before our heroes. Like a lot. It's been like four scenes, which is interesting. Also, the bad guy base is cool. I was hoping we were going to meet like a bad guy Q, who had bad guy gadgets. But no. But then I was wondering, in the interests of, as I think I may have mentioned before, the engineering term, you've reached perfection when there's nothing left to take away, nothing left to add. Do you feel like we needed this scene? Because Red Grant easily could have just walked in the door on the boat and been like, here's your guy, Red Grant. Okay, get out of here.
I think, well, and this it is interesting watching this, because this, like, I'd say the first four Connery films are very much loyal to the books. Like, there's maybe a few changes, but like this scene where he's being massaged by a half-naked woman is in the book, and like R and Rosa Klebb coming to recruit him. So I think it's mostly because they were being slavish to the book that it could easily could have happened, like you said. Sure, except we don't really get to know Grant as much that way.
Well, we barely get to know him at all, but I think these old movies, they like to take their time.
That's
It's
true,
nothing's
and
it's
there's
not
nothing
so
wrong with
hectic.
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, anything else to say about Spectre Island?
I thought it was cool. I thought it was neat. Though it's interesting, it doesn't come back. Like this army of henchmen doesn't come back in this movie. But it does help to explain where this army of henchmen comes
Except
from.
they do.
Well, I
We'll
guess we'll have to
get to
agree to
that.
disagree about what constitutes an army.
Okay. All right. Well, keep that in mind. So next we get the scene of we meet Tatiana Romanova, who otherwise known as Tanya, who works as a Russian cipher clerk, and she's been re being recruited into this whole scheme, but she thinks she's doing it all for Mother Russia rather than Spectre. Because she's, well, apparently Rosa Klebb's defection from Smersh to Spectre is only known to a very few members of the Russian or the Soviet political scheme.
It's not, it's great. It's like Chernobyl. It's a commentary on the Soviet totalitarian system and how it makes them more vulnerable. And I like how the bad guys are smart in this. Again, it's not just stealing a nuclear bomb and threatening to blow up the world.
But yeah, so she is evaluated by Rosa Klebb. What did you think about the vibes of this scene?
You mean the gay stuff?
Okay, I was wondering if you were going to pick up on it.
Yeah, well, so Rosa Klebb is a great villain. She's really interesting. She's cool. There's a lot going on, but it does feel like they're doing like a gay panic kind of situation with her.
Yeah, and it's much more prevalent in the book. When we talk about the differences, I'll get to that.
Yes.
But yeah, so she evaluates her both, physically and also as just like, all right, what is she loyal enough to Russia to or and the Soviet and the Soviet Union to take care to go through with this, which she passes, and we finally get to James Bond, who is lounging around with oh,
Are
what's
we
her
supposed to
name?
know who she
Eunice Be
was?
Sylvia Trench, that's her name. The character's name is Sylvia Trench. She was the girl who was playing cards with him in the beginning of Dr. No.
Christian, how dare you? I remember who Sylvia Trench is. Don't insult me. But I didn't think she was Sylvia Trench because I didn't think she looked like her. Maybe I
It's
forgot what
her. It's
she
the
looks
exact same actress.
like.
It's she was so she was rec That's one of the few Bond girls who recurs, and also she was meant to actually keep recurring. Terrence Young, who was director of Dr. No in this film, wanted to keep her having her come back as, like, she keeps Bond keeps getting pulled away as they're about to, keep, right. you know, keep the relationship up. But we got a different director with the next movie, I believe Guy Hamilton. So that's sort of got dropped.
Yeah, like I said, things yeah. were kind of rough. Things were rough when you first get started.
You keep saying rough, but I'm bristling at that because this is not a rough movie.
No, it's not a rough. It's a good movie, but I mean the formula, like it's kind of like Star Trek, right? They're trying to figure it all out, exactly how the warp drive works, exactly how the uniforms work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'll give you that, but do you want it to be a slave to formula?
Definitely.
I don't necessarily. That's,
yeah, okay. This is something I like about this one, is that it's like a little, pick up on the differences. I also
noticed,
well,
I just know that if you keep saying rough, it's going to make it sound, especially to the Bond fans out there, that you don't like this movie.
No, I did like it. But I also wanted to notice there's no martinis, and he never says Bond, James Bond. Unless I missed it, but I don't think I did.
I don't think it... My friends call me James Bond. No, he doesn't.
I like that. But yeah, so as you know, Christian, I like things that are different. So I appreciate that this was different.
All right. Okay. I just want to make clear, like, I get what you're coming at, but I want to make it clear for the audience that that's what you're saying.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for making that clear.
Yeah. So he gets called into the office. We have a briefing from M where he spells out the whole plot, or at least what they know of as the plot, is that, you know, Tanya is a Russian cipher clerk who says she fell in love with a picture of James Bond and that she now wants to come over and defect, and the bait is a Lecter decoding device.
Yep.
You also get a Q scene here with actually Desmond Llewellyn Q, not the guy who played him last movie, who was not Desmond Llewellyn.
And who is the armor. So the gadgets is great. I like how it's one gadget with all the other things inside it. Does he use all of it? There's the tear gas thing.
Almost all of it. Yes, he uses that.
Okay.
All right. I think he does use all of it. Now that I think about it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He gets his little briefcase and then goes off to Istanbul. We get the arrival in Istanbul. A driver greets him, says Kerem Bey sent a car. Kerem Bey is the head of Station T in Turkey. And we get the first of many uses of a code phrase.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I borrow a match. Oh, I prefer a lighter. Better still, until they go wrong.
Yeah, it was good. I also like how they bring that back later.
Yeah. Yeah. But you also notice that not only is Grant there and he's watching them and following them, you also see some Russian spies who follow them in a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that. Is something else different is how Grant like stalks him through the whole movie, like Michael Myers, and then he makes his appearance at the end. Yeah, you don't see that really in any other James Bond movies, to my memory.
Mm-hmm. There are other there are other films where the villain doesn't show up until like halfway through. But in the case of where you see him, but Bond doesn't, no, I don't think there are.
Yeah.
So next we meet Kerem Bey, who's the head, as I said, of Station T in Turkey. We also find out that like all of his key personnel are all his sons.
Christian, what did this remind you of? This is going to be a deep cut. Deep cut.
What is
Munich.
It?
Munich. The French guys in Munich. The family.
I guess so.
Yeah.
It didn't really, but no.
Except that these guys, like, actually help with the government. They don't hate them.
Yeah. And so Kerem Bey gives his opinion that this is all a trap and that he should, you know, just enjoy a few days in Istanbul and then go home.
Yeah, which, I don't know about you, that came off as a little bit threatening to me. Like, if James Bond didn't go home, maybe he was going to make him go.
Oh, I think it was more of a, you should go home because this is, like, he even spells out, this is an old friend of mine. He pokes his nose and he says, and it says something smells. He's just as suspicious of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Now, as this is happening, we see Grant picks up one of the Bulgarians who the Russians use as spies in Istanbul and kills him.
Mm-hmm.
And we get something that I kind of miss in my James Bond films. It's when Bond goes into a hotel room, checks in, and checks out his hotel room. Like, goes around it.
Well, something else I thought was interesting about the engineering side of things, about the movie.
Okay.
They showed him going to the hotel clerk, checking in, getting his key, walking to the elevator, and getting in when they really didn't need to. It almost made it feel like they were padding the runtime.
I will say this. This is, you know, this movie came out, you know, 60s, early 60s, post-World War II. I mean, it's a travelogue is what it is. It's people, unlike nowadays, a lot of people wouldn't have to experience that luxuries of going to hotels and things like that. So really milking that and showing up. Oh, this is what, you know, what the high life is why that's in there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I like that. Also, it's just the movies were older, so you could get away with a little bit slower pace. But I also like how when he's checking the room for bugs, the James Bond theme is blasting. Yeah. Like, you'd expect him to be, like, punching someone or shooting, but instead he's just slowly walking around the room.
It just makes the scene that much cooler. Right. I should do that anytime I enter a hotel room, is just blast the James Bond theme as I'm looking around to things.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
Yeah. But yeah, he does discover that the room is bugged and tells hotel reception the bed's too small. And they said there's nothing else except the honeymoon suite. So, oh, let me take a look at it. Thankfully, we don't repeat this exact same thing as he goes in the honeymoon suite.
Yeah, they give us, they cut us a break there. But I get the impression that the hotel people are, like, in on the spies.
Oh, yes. Right? Oh, they definitely are.
I mean, that was pretty clear. So.
Yeah, yeah. So we see the dead Bulgarian discovered in the car by the Russians. And as a result, and as retaliation, the Soviets bomb Karen Bay's office.
See, it's funny because sometimes they take too long with other things, and then the movie goes too fast. Like, this is when it goes too fast. I would have liked a scene of the Russians being like, they killed one of us, so let's kill one of them. Tell your men to set a bomb outside the consulate. It will be done.
I honestly like the surprise. You don't know, like, you see Karim and his mistress just sort of about to get into some hanky-panky, and then explosion. I like it. Like, I think if we had that, it would ruin that surprise there.
Now, of course, those of us who played the video game know that the explosion leads to Bond shooting and killing about 75 Russians and then taking down a helicopter. But that doesn't seem to have happened in this movie.
Not in this movie, no.
Mm-hmm.
But we do get a scene where Bond and Karim go into the undergrounds of Istanbul to go right up underneath the Russian consulate and look through a periscope and spy on their meeting there, and also find out that the person who has orchestrated the bombing is an old enemy of Karim Bey's named Krylenko.
More bad guys appear.
Yeah.
I also liked how they weren't able to hear. It's like these super spies do have their limits.
And so, because they need to take care of this Krylenko business, Bond can't go back to his hotel. So instead, they're going to go to, I'm going to call it a Romani camp. They use a different word in the film, which is a slur. So we're not going to use it here.
Yeah, so this is very memorable. This whole scene. It breaks up the visuals, too, which is nice.
So this is, I'm sure for people of the Romani race, is probably very uncomfortable, but
I mean, it's hardly the only movie of its kind that does this.
True, but I'm just saying it. You know, it is very stereotypical. You have where you have this encampment, and then you know have a fight between two girls because they're both in love with the same man, one of the chief's sons. So the only way to solve it is let them fight to the death.
I mean, I don't know. It's a kind of, it's like an RPG where you have a side quest. You have to resolve some local trouble.
I like viewing it that way. That's nice. But and as they're about to, you know, we see a decent amount of the girl fight, and as about one of them is about to kill the other when there was a shot rings out, and it turns out that Krylenko and a bunch of the Bulgarians are attacking the Romani camp.
And I do like there's a throwaway line where, like, the Bulgarians are the Russian proxies. Same way these guys are Karim's proxies, and then now they're fighting each other. Oh, it's like it's a Cold War. Wow.
So throughout this, what do you think of the music in this scene?
I mean, it's James Bond. Like, the music's always good. It's not something I noticed this time, though. I mean, the action was great. So, I like James Bond doing the shooting from the hip.
He does do that. So, like, this music here is known as what's known as a 007 theme. So John Barry, who has written, I think, all of the theme, or at least the majority of the soundtracks from here on up until A Living Daylights. So Monty Norman created the James Bond theme, and John Barry sort of wanted his own secondary theme, so he called, which he's called the 007 theme. And that's what this sort of theme is. You hear it pop up in a couple of other James Bond movies, and you'll recognize it once you hear it. But yeah, I enjoyed Connery going throughout. I think this is one of my favorite levels in the video game, is like getting to assist in all the random fighting that's happening.
Yeah, it's not the kind of action we normally see in James Bond movies. Usually it's him versus everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you say that, but when we get to the formulaic Bond, we'll talk more about that, and especially with the next Sean Connery scene.
Oh, by the way, we skipped the big belly dance. I don't know if there's anything to say about it.
There's nothing really to talk about there. No, it's just that there's a belly dance scene, at, like, as then was performing for Bond and Karen Bay.
Okay.
Yeah. So one other important part here is Bond's about to get shot by one of the Bulgarians, and then someone else kills him, the Bulgarian, before he's shot. And turns out it's Red Grant. Why is that going on?
Well, because I don't want to say it's like Star Trek. Or he's basically like, I'm the one who has to kill him. It has to be me. Well, also, Bond doesn't have the Lecter yet.
Exactly. He needs him alive still. That's why. It's not I'm the only one who gets to kill you. It's because he's still carrying out the plot. And he needs the plot to go on.
Even if the script seems to have forgotten about it.
We'll get to it. So, we get, after this business is done, Krylenko has escaped. So the Romani are torturing one of the Bulgarians who are still alive and tell him where Krylenko is. And we find him hiding behind a giant billboard of the movie Call Me Buona.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we need to go back to the Romani for a second.
All right.
Maybe I missed something. I need you to explain it to
me. Oh, right.
But I think the way he resolved the issue with the two
women,
he had them both fall in love with him. Is that correct?
Yep. Pretty much so, yeah. So at the end of the whole thing, the Romani chief says that, you know, you've saved my life, you're now my son, and if there's anything I can do for you. And he says, well, can you stop the girl fight? And so now Bond gets to decide how to resolve that. So takes both of them for the night.
Which really doesn't resolve it, which is hilarious. But I love this because it's just so not what you normally see in a James Bond movie.
So it was resolved in some way, because I watched this time, and you notice when they're saying goodbye to Bond as he's leaving, one of them is like right up all around, like arms around him, and the other is further back. So it's clearly that one was the winner. How he determined that is unknown to us.
Though I'm sure we have our theories.
All right, so back to the sniper.
Yes.
The sniper level. Krylenko is hiding out behind the giant, you know, billboard of the movie Call Me Buona. Karen Bay got shot in the arm. Bond lets him use his arm or his shoulder as like a perch for the rifle which is the rifle that is in the attache case.
Yeah, and he says you only have one shot. Does that mean the gun can only fire one shot? Because he only uses it the once.
No, there is a bunch of spare ammunition. It's more of a, you can reload, but it's really, you'll really only have this one shot. Otherwise, you might get away.
It's going to take too long, yeah.
Yeah. Karen manages to shoot him, and then Bond goes back to his hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
Gets on the phone to downstairs, orders breakfast, turns on the bath, and then sees something across the hall, across the way.
And I said to my girlfriend, last time this happened, someone was playing golf in his room.
Also note, he never turns off the bath.
Oh no, it's really, really wasting water.
Well, that, and it's just, you would just be flooding. Tatiana Romanova is there under the sheets, wearing only, you know, a little black ribbon around her neck.
Interesting choice.
And so, yeah, they're introduced to each other, is recalling things from his file, like the scar that he has.
Wait, okay, so the scar, was that from the last movie? I don't remember that.
It shows up earlier in the scene with Sylvia Trench.
Right.
But that's we haven't seen it before or since.
My girlfriend also liked in this scene, apparently Bond is a yogurt person, because you see him ordering his breakfast, and they have him list all the breakfast items.
Green figs, yogurt, coffee, very black.
Yep. That I kind of forget, because it's a little bit of an insight into his character. Which I like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Nothing wrong with, I like a good yogurt in the morning.
I meant that the movie spent time doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, so they get into bed together, and what we discover is that there's a giant mirror behind the bed, as the headboard.
Headboard, yep.
Thank you. And on the other side of the mirror, it's is actually it's one way glass, and you see a move a film camera and Grant back there, like smoking a cigarette as watching it happen.
As he's making James Bond's sex tape.
Yep. Bond and Tatiana meet the next day at St. Sophia's, which is a very famous location in Istanbul. And they w what she brings is plans for the consulate, which they were wishing that they had back when they were underneath the consulate, because they're trying to figure out a way to get the lector out of there.
I also like Bond wearing his sunglasses, 60s sunglasses.
Ah, I do enjoy those. Yeah, I may have pairs that look similar. But also what happens here is there's another dead or another agent who's killed. I don't remember if it's from the Russian side or from the from MI6's side, but another one's killed. So just to really up the tension happening in Istanbul.
Okay, so this confused me. So the agent is killed and he drops something, and then Grant replaces it or something? What happened? He just all he does is kill the guy?
He kills the
That's
guy,
it.
yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, what happens is that Tatiana drops the plans and oh,
That
the
drops the
Bulgarian
plans.
is about to pick it up.
Oh.
But then Grant kills him because he needs a plot to go forward.
Right. Gotcha. Thank you.
They next rendezvous on a boat where we have Bond basically trying to make sure that the goods are legit for the lector. So he has a like tape recorder hidden inside a camera. And we have Tanya describing the lector, but also wanting to know that she will be fine in your in England, but also that she will be well loved in England.
Yeah, she's really selling the whole in love with James Bond thing. I love the old camera, like this gigantic old camera slash voice recorder, I guess. But this is my favorite part of the movie right here.
You mean when we go back to M listening to the recording with like all the other people?
Yeah. Keep going.
Tanya says, you know, tell me, James, am I as exciting as all those Western women? And Bond says, well, no. Well, there was one time with M in Tokyo.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
And it's a good joke because as soon as that like comes up, M pauses it and tells Moneypenny to go out of the room, and yet she's still eavesdropping on like the intercom.
I need someone to make a comic book or a fan film or something of M and James Bond like out on the town in Tokyo.
Except the only problem with that is that there's in You Only Live Twice, you know, five, 4 or 5 movies later, Bond says he's never been to Japan.
Well, come on. James Bond isn't a, is it? He doesn't tell the truth. He's a spy.
Anyways, but yes,
I forgive it. There's the
that
point.
line is always funny. It's always been funny. Yes, he gets a telegram back from M saying that the goods are legit, so proceed with the plan. And so M, not M, Bond and Karambay are planning out what how they're going to do it. They have the drawing that Tanya gave them, as well as the original architect's blueprints. And they also decide that they're going to tell her the wrong date for when this is going to happen, so that she can't, even if she is working at cross purposes, she can't tell anyone.
Nice, pretty smart.
Nice double bluff. So on the 13th, we go to the Russian embassy. Where he like asks like one of the workers is that the correct time like a few times and like I like that you know Russian clocks are always on time and as soon as that he says that explosion Kerem like puts off a bomb sets off some tear gas inside there Bond like grabs a gas mask out of his briefcase
And he
and
guns down
Bond goes
50 more Russians. Oh, wait, that was just in the game.
yeah.
Yeah, I like how the movie has some good jokes. It's a good dry humor.
Yeah. And so he goes to steal the lector and Tanya. And they go down into the tunnels where they see a bunch of rats, which proves that line from Get Smart Wrong, where he says, rats, I never see James Bond dealing with rats.
Ooh, good memory. I don't remember that.
I
It just
do.
makes me think of
Yeah.
Indiana Jones.
Right, yeah.
So why were the rats running around? Just because of the
Because there was a
explosion?
big explosion.
Oh, yeah, fair enough.
So, Kerem guides them through the tunnels and they pop up near the train station. And as they get to the train station, Tanya panics because there's Benz, a KGB guy, who sees her as she gets on the train and gets on the train after them. But also, did you spot who else was already on the train?
Yeah, Grant.
Yeah, oh, that, yeah, he's that there. Grant. He's lurking.
He's literally one step ahead of them. But yeah, I liked the Russian, all the interplay of the different teams. I also like the Trinity, like Bond, Tanya, and Karim.
It's
a fun dynamic they have there.
So on the train, Karim tells Bond what the plan is, which is they paid off the conductor so that they'll slow down at one of the turns, and then they'll hop off just before, just after six.
Very straightforward. I like how Bond has passports and cover names and women's wear like with him, ready to go.
Yeah. And Tanya's going through a fashion show of all the things that she's going to wear.
Yep.
And in the meantime, Karim works with the conductor and finds Benz and keeps him company while they're waiting.
I have a couple specific observations I have here.
All right, sure.
There's a couple part where Bond and Tanya are in bed. And there's a knock at the door, and Bond says, "You're nearest." It's like, what an asshole. But it also kind of makes sense. And then also there's a part where, they're in the room, and he's walking around, and he pulls the blind on the window, like, super fast, and it makes a fast sound. For some reason, I'm expecting Grant to be, like, standing behind the window, even though I know it's impossible. Just because it felt like something out of a horror movie. Like, he pulls it, and then Grant, smashes through. But
That's funny. Anyway. I've noticed that, too, that he gets, he pulls it down, and, it goes up, and he, gets annoyed at it, at the sound of it, too. As they're about to, it's about 6 o'clock, so they need to meet Karim for tea time in the cafe car. And they get all dressed up, and the conductor finds Bond and tells him that there's been a terrible accident and shows them the room that Karim and Benz were in and shows that they killed each other.
Dun, dun, dun. Nice. And then I like how it produces a change in Bond's character. He gets pretty mad.
Mm-hmm. And also we see Karim's son, or one of Karim's sons, with the car. Ready for them to slow down, and is confused why the train didn't slow down and no one hopped off.
Yeah, this made my girlfriend sad. She was like, "Oh no, his dad's dead, and now he's never gonna see him again."
Aww.
She felt bad for him.
Yeah. So Bond confronts Tanya, and he's trying to get anything out of her because he knows that she's in some of the plot, but she doesn't know. He doesn't know how much he knows, and he wants to find out. And she refuses to tell anything. He slaps her a few times.
Mm-hmm.
For the record, slapping women is wrong.
Yeah, it was. This movie's a product of its time in a few different ways.
But yeah, she refuses to tell him anything and says, "Once we get to England, I'll tell you everything." So, at the next stop, one of Karim's sons finds Bond, and they do the code phrase again.
Mm.
But did you notice who's watching them give the code phrase?
Yes, Grant. But I also was wondering if Grant... No, I thought maybe Grant, one of Grant's underlings, was that guy, was not his son, and that was how Grant was able to work his way in. But that's not what happened. I also can tell they're in Northern Europe because it's 5:30 p.m. and it's pitch black outside.
But I appreciated this time when they do the code phrase. They don't even say it. It's all in pantomime, really.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't even hear the audio of it. You just see them going through the motions of it.
Yeah, I like it. The movie rewards people who pay close attention.
Yeah.
Including all the Grant creeping in the back.
Bond tells Karim's son that his father is dead and says, call him and have him send someone in from Station Y in Yugoslavia to meet me because we need to get, we need help to get over that border.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where we probably get one of the many inspirations for the Indiana Jones montage. You don't have the red line with the moving, but you do have it going over the map. You have the montage of the train and all the different places it goes past.
I did like it. Of course, the best music for the map is the Indiana Jones music.
Of course,
we'll take it.
But From Russia with Love is also good too. Mm-hmm. I do appreciate here. We've heard a snippet of the actual theme, and we heard it. Hold on, I always forget. Is it Diegetic is when it's in the movie, or is it not diegetic?
I think diegetic's when it's in the movie. Yeah.
So this is one of the few, well, the first example of the like theme song being diegetic in the film, because we heard it when Bond and Sylvia Trench are canoodling in the boat, like on a radio.
Ooh. I want to hear the fan explanation for how that works.
There just happens to be a song.
Yeah, this isn't Star Wars. They have to explain everything.
Throughout the rest of the soundtrack, we hear a lot of instrumentals of it as well, which I enjoy. Like, that's the thing that John Barry did really well, was integrating the James Bond theme and the theme song in together throughout the soundtrack.
Absolutely.
So we arrive in Zagreb, and we see that Grant exits the train first and goes over, meets the MI6 man, and again, in pantomime, gives the code. You even just see the reference to the lighter and the whole thing. And it's all silent. And then you see them go back into the station. Grant definitely kills the guy and then poses as him to meet with Bond. And then again, we see the pantomime of the code.
And again, this was great. So unexpected. Can you imagine Jaws walk into James Bond and be like, "Hello, James Bond. I am actually on your side until the moment I choose to betray you." I also like Grant's British accent. He's like, "Steady there, old chum. We'll have you out of Russia, no problem." Yeah, old man. That being said, I am a little bit suspicious that Bond never figured out.
Well, one, he asked M to send someone in station Y, and then he gives the code. So you would think that's it. Like, the code is literally supposed to show that you're safe.
No, I get that, but I was hoping, like, as they spent more and more time together, Bond would have been like, no English man takes two lumps of tea in his tea. You must really be from Spectre. Something like that.
Zach, that literally happens.
What? Did I miss it?
Yes, we'll get to it.
Well, Grant still gets the drop on him, so...
He does, but he is suspicious about it. All right, so, Anya and Bond have dinner with Captain Nash, which is what Grant is posing as, and no one saw... This is a audio medium, so no one saw me put finger quotes around Captain Nash, but I did.
Yeah, we get it, yeah.
And he orders fish, and then orders red wine with fish.
Oh, yeah. I remember this now. But he figures it out too late. Though I did, some of Bond's actions kind of made it seem like he was suspicious. So I like that.
He is suspicious about it. But so what happens next is that Grant spills Tanya's wine, picks it up, and puts something in her to drug her.
So did Bond notice this?
Oh, yeah. Because he said, what did you put in the very next scene as they're putting her to bed? He says, what do you put in her drink? He said, chloral hydrate.
That's right.
He's like, why did you do it? He's like, are you here for the girl or the lector?
I think that should be pretty obvious.
Grant is explaining, what his plan was. Says, here, better me show it on the map. And tells him what part of the plan is. But as he's telling him, pulls a gun out of, a drop holster on his ankle holster. Hits him on the back of the head. And this is where... Bond says, red wine with fish, I should have known.
Yeah.
So literally the thing you were describing, Zach.
But it is too late. I wanted to figure it out before he got the drop on it.
Yes, but then we don't have a movie.
Well, then it's definitely not as exciting. But then, okay, so Christian, I know this is a question that's been asked about James Bond a lot. But I'm going to ask it again. I know it's a cliche, but why doesn't Grant just kill him? Because he has the Lecter.
Well, he's about to kill him, is what's happened. Bond plays with his ego and gets him monologuing.
Oh, I see. No more questions.
Yeah. It's all about Grant's ego. He plays up his ego and, like, this is where Grant reveals that it's not Smirsch that's going on here, or that's doing all this. It's Spectre. And... The whole plot is that, they've got film, their encounter in the bedroom.
Sex tape, yeah.
Put that in. Yeah. They've got their sex tape. They're going to put it in her purse along with a note saying that, what was it? Oh, yeah, that, if you don't, marry me and bring me to the West, I'm going to send this to every, you know, major news station, and then they'll discover both of their dead bodies.
So it's like a murder-suicide plot.
Yeah, which will be a scandal on the British Secret Service, and on top of that, you know, they won't have a Lecter.
Oh, yeah, in addition to everything else, and they lost their best guy. Yeah. So it's a total it's a total villain monologue, and he like explains the whole plan.
So he's trying to bargain with them. Says, "All right, you know, how much are they paying you? We'll double it," and then that doesn't work. So he says, "You know, can I at least have a cigarette?" Say, and I'll pay you for it. Like, with what? 50 gold sovereigns in the case. So there, he's using that other gadget.
Right, not bad.
And then Grant's greed gets the better of him. He says, is there more in the other case? And sure, should be a standard kit. So we notice that when Bond opened it, he turned the latches horizontally before he opened it because his case was primed. And he assumed that the real Captain Nash's case was also primed. But Grant doesn't know this, so he opens it normally. It explodes in his face.
Yeah, so the other case is, in fact, the exact same as the one Bond has. Yep. Very interesting.
Standard issue. Well, that's what Q says. It's standard issue now. So they have their fight, the train fight. This is probably one of the best, most intense fights in a James Bond film. And they're still sort of chasing after this intensity.
Yeah, it was really good. It's like probably the most memorable. This is one of the few parts from the movie I remember from when I saw it way back when.
And Bond uses the dagger that pops out of the case. So I think that's pretty much all of the gadgets in the case.
Yeah. And again, I thought it would end with Grant going out the window, but that was not the case. It must be some other movie that I'm thinking of.
There's at least two where that happens on the train.
There you go.
Three, now that I think about it. Oh, yeah. Huh. There's quite a few of those. But yeah, so it ends with Bond using Grant's own weapon against him, his Garrote watch.
That's right.
Bond tries to wake up Tanya, who's still very groggy from the chlorohydrate, but wakes her up, and they take Grant's exit from the train. There's a stalled car on the tracks they use to get off the train, and then they knock out Grant's ally.
Yeah.
And take his car.
So, I'm sorry, there's a couple things here.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is kind of like the Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring, where in my memory, I feel like the emotional climax of the movie is when he kills Grant. Mm-hmm. And then everything after this is, first of all, I had no memory of it. And also, it's kind of like, it feels like that's the end of the movie.
It's a lot.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's funny how Bond keeps threatening to leave Tanya behind. Some action hero he is. I also like how he still has his hat the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, he was a proper English gentleman who, you know, always had a hat.
It was this the Kennedy years when men stopped wearing hats all the time?
About there, so, yeah. All right, so next we get what I refer to as the North by Northwest scene.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I had 000 memory of this. It was totally new.
You have, yeah. Bond is hunting your Spectre army. Here's the start of it. Here's, you know, now we've got all these henchmen who are, first of all, in a helicopter trying to go after him, and he managed to use the sniper rifle against them, blows up the helicopter.
Yeah. I like how a lot of it was just him, like, run, dive as the helicopter goes by. I was wondering what both of their plans were. Was the plan of the helicopter just to hit him? Splatter him, as us Halo players would say. And it was his plan just to run around until, I guess, he found a hiding spot. All right, Chris.
Yeah.
Now time for me to I'm going to share one of my favorite quotes early because how much I hate it.
Okay.
So he kills the chopper, and then he says, I'd say one of their aircraft is missing.
Just missing.
Like, what does that even mean? Is it a pun?
It's trying to be, but it really isn't.
Yeah, it's probably the worst thing I've ever heard James Bond say.
we'll
I loved it because it was so bad.
it's yeah. I think it was trying to be like, you know, there's this what is it? In Dr. No, there's the three blind mice guys, and they're in the hearse chasing after him, and you know, when he knocks them off the road, he says something to the effect of, I think they're on their way to a funeral. It was trying to be that, but it failed.
It's very direct.
But yeah, so after that we get to the Spectre boat, where we get the first instance of this organization does not tolerate failure, and I'm going to kill the other person than you think.
Yeah, you failed me for the last time.
It's all set up to be, have Rosa Klebb be killed, but instead it's Kronstein.
Yep.
By the very iconic, you know, shoe dagger.
Which is great. I love the shoe dagger.
And we get our next action scene, which is the boat chase. They're trying to make their way towards Venice. When they get here, you wanted a Spectre army? Here's a whole army full of, or a navy full of boats.
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
So this scene was great. I loved it. It should have been in the middle of the movie, because a lot of these action scenes are like backloaded. Again, still working the kinks out. Yeah, so it's all good.
Also, you know, I have to mention this. The guy on the boat who went with the megaphone. There's a few scenes, there are a few parts where he's talking, but he's not holding up the megaphone, but his voice is still projected as if he's holding the megaphone.
Ooh, that's funny. It's like an error mistake, if you will.
Yeah,
I liked how he kept trying to talk James Bond down, as if James Bond would ever do that.
And they're all, he's also like yelling at the boat, saying, "You're shooting too close. You're trying to stop them, not to kill them."
He's like, "No, you idiots. No, you idiots, stop shooting him." But then we had a funny exchange. He said, "Bond, heave to." And my girlfriend says, "What does heave to mean?" And I wasn't actually sure. So I said, "I think it means pull over when you're in a boat."
Something to that effect? I actually don't. In context, that makes sense.
I guess so, yeah. It's funny. You don't even really think about it.
No, you don't. So we finally get them arriving in Venice. They're in a hotel room. And we see Rosa Klebb disguised as a maid. And Tanya notices her and, like, panics. And then Bond realizes it as, you know, he's on the phone with someone. And she pulls off the wig and pulls out a gun. They have a fight. She pulls out the shoe knife. And he, like, gets a chair like she's a lion and he's a lion tamer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. How else are you going to stop him with the foot knife?
Yeah, he manages to get her, like, against the wall with the chair. And, like, his gun had I think it was Rosa Klebb's gun had fallen away onto the floor. And Tanya has that moment of, all right, who am I supposed to help? Am I helping Bond or am I helping Mother Russia? And she ends up shooting Klebb.
Of course she does, because it's James Bond.
Yes. We end with a boat ride through Venice where, you know, they're about to make out. And then Tanya says, "Careful, behave yourself, James. We're being filmed." And there's like a tourist on one of the the bridges overhead. I think one of the more famous bridges. I don't remember which one though. And then he like remembers. Oh wait, Grant put that film in her purse. And he goes and looks at it. And Tanya asks, "What's that?" "I'll show you." And then he starts making out with her in the boat. He throws it overboard, and the most awkward, like, rear projection, like, waving goodbye.
Yes, that was really... I didn't even realize that was what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
I also wondered if he was exposing the film.
No, it's if it's already developed, it wouldn't be... Yeah, it's not... Yeah, it's
No, that's
it's
not fine. What was happening, yeah. So, do you remember my joke about how James Bond movies usually end with James Bond making out with a Bond girl on a raft?
I mean, that's really accurate for, like, all of the Connerys.
This one was so close. Not quite there.
I mean, it's not always a raft. It's usually a boat of some sort, though. Or there's a body of water nearby.
There you go. Hedge your bets and just say something on the water. All right, so now it is... So that's the movie. Thank you, Christian. Now it's time for our Spy Fact versus Fiction. I can go first, if you'd like.
Sure, I've got a lot of stuff, but I'll let you see what you've got.
Quickly, something interesting about Siamese fighting fish, which is Blofeld has. It says when they start fighting, they do high energy attacks and then like decrease their behavior to save energy.
Interesting. All right.
Which is, yeah, it's not quite as interesting as it sounds, so I'm going to skip that. There's a part where Bond holds up Tanya's little like band, black velvet band.
A ribbon
thing.
Yeah. Calls it her trousseau.
Yeah, so do you know what a trousseau is?
I do, but I'll let you explain.
Okay, so Merriam-Webster, a possession such as clothing and linens that a bride assembles for her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it went what that specific ribbon was, but apparently that's not the case.
Ah, yeah. So it's basically because they're married now. Wink, because you know they're posing as a married couple. So
yeah, exactly.
That's her true self.
Venom versus Poison, LiveScience.com. Venom is injected directly by an animal, whereas poison is delivered passively, such as by being touched or ingested.
So it is technically a venom.
Yeah, well, the movie uses it correctly. That's what was impressive.
Yeah, all right.
You say, we have to get a faster venom or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then I was going to have something about honey trapping, but were you going to do that?
I have a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay, so then finally, Wikipedia, honey trapping. Honey trapping is a practice involving romantic or sexual relationships for gain, and it has a long history in the use of espionage. During the Cold War, female agents called Mosno girls or Mosnos were used by the KGB. It comes from the Russian word Mosno, meaning it is permitted, as these agents were allowed to breach regulations restricting Russian contact with foreigners.
Hmm.
In 2009, MI5 distributed a 14-page document to hundreds of British banks, businesses, and financial institutions titled The Threat from Chinese Espionage, and it described a wide-ranging Chinese effort to blackmail Western business people over sexual relationships. Hmm. So, yeah. And then this is from my memory. I don't have a source, but I remember somewhere the KGB would use honey trapping, but America and the West would not, because we thought it was unethical.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Zach. What I've got for spy fact and spy fiction is, so first I'll start off with the movie and book differences. So here's the interesting thing. In the book, the main villains are actually Smersh, not Spectre.
Oh, did you not come up with that yet?
No, Spectre did not come out until Thunderball, and we'll get into that when we get to Thunderball. But it's interesting that you mentioned in the, you know, in the movie how you're four scenes in and you haven't seen James Bond yet, other than fake James Bond.
Right.
He doesn't show up until a third of the way through the novel.
Ooh, nice.
So you have all this backstory and detail about Red Grant and who he is, how his father was a strong man from Ireland, and his mother was, I forget, I don't remember what the backstory was. And then you also have sort of this different motivation for the plot. Instead of, you know, Spectre wanting to pit Smersh and MI6 against each other, it's really because Smersh and the Soviet Union have had all these failures recently, and so they need something to really turn everything in their favor. Bond is almost incidental to the revenge plot. Like, he had come up against Smersh a few times in the novels by that point. This is, what, the fourth or fifth novel? I don't remember off the top of my head. Casino Royale, Live and Let Die, Diamonds Are Forever. Maybe the fourth. He just happens to be the perfect person they can use in the plot. And it's not... they want it specifically motivated against him.
Yeah, it's not personal.
Also, the Lector in the book was actually called the Spectre. But because of Spectre being involved with the plot, they had to change the name to the Lector. Some of the order of events are moved around a little bit. But the biggest... and one of the... well, also, yeah, there is no helicopter chase. There's no boat chase. After, you know, Grant is killed, they make their way to Venice. And this is where we get the biggest change. Well, one, Tanya's not in this scene, and they are knowingly going after Rosa Klebb.
Oh.
And so they go in, they're going after her, and as the fight happens, Bond gets kicked in the shin, and it's then revealed that there was a knife blade. And so he actually gets stabbed, and he, like, falls over, and the whole thing ends on a cliffhanger.
So I definitely like the movie better. The thing with Tanya having to decide who to shoot.
It is very much in the same vein of like the Reichenbach fall in Sherlock Holmes mythology, where Ian Fleming was sort of getting tired of it, so he decided to kill off his character, but then was convinced to bring him back.
How many books had come out before this one had?
I believe it was four or five. It's either the fourth or fifth book. I don't remember off the top of my head.
So not a ton.
But I mean, five books once every year.
There you go.
That's a lot for one writer. So he was getting tired of it.
Would you say an ending like that is a cliffhanger or a cop-out? To use the phrase from Argyle.
I would say it's a cliffhanger. It is not a cop-out, cop-out, because you have the entirely complete story, and then you have that little thing. So,
yep.
Into some other spy fact versus spy fiction. I've got, so the Lecter slash Spectre is clearly based on the Enigma machine, which we've talked a lot about in the Imitation Game. So if you want more information about that, go back to that. We also, you know, like we mentioned earlier, we've seen specifically in The Living Daylights, where it's, you know, revealed that it sounds like General Pushkin has reactivated Smersh. I do have a coda on everything we talked about in Smersh there. And, well, first I'll say that, you know, Smersh stands for Smirit Spionem, which means death to spies. Now, in an article from Newsweek in December of 2023, it's revealed that a Russian politician named Andrei Guruyulov has made remarks which said that basically, to the effect that Smersh had been reactivated, that they were sending it to created a department that works in the same way in the what they refer to as the new territories, Ukrainian regions that Russia has overtaken. So Smersh lives again.
Yikes! Old school.
Yeah, yeah. So also Rocky, which is the drink that they drink at the Romani camp, is an alcoholic beverage made of thrice distilled pomace and grape pomace and flavored with aniseed. So it's very anise flavored, if not licorice sort of thing. I tried it for the first time about a month ago. It's very interesting.
Nice.
It's got sort of similar to ouzo in a way.
Never had either of them.
Ouzo. All right. So, but you know, like there's Harem base as rocky, filthy stuff. It's very tasty. It's interesting. Like I was given a tip, like, you know, don't drink it straight. You know, if they brought it to me with a cup, you know, in a like a little carafe with a cup and some ice and a carafe of water, and they said, you know, all right, the ice in the cup, pour some in. It's gonna change color when it hits the ice and it gets more cloudy.
Wow, it's like something out of Harry Potter.
Yeah. The Attaché case. Now, this is, you know, basically the first gadget in the James Bond films. And it also was one of the most, you know, sought after toys. They made a toy version of it, which had, you know, the sniper rifle. It had the bullets. It had, what else did it have? Secret agent passport, decoder book, and the knife that popped out. And it is one of the holy grails of James Bond toys. They used to come up for auction every now and then. On eBay, I put out on a bid for $200 at one point. It went up to a couple thousand, and I was like, I can't, I'm not doing that.
I wonder if Dexter has one.
He probably does. The James Bond 007 online store, they've recently, I think in the last year or two, maybe it's for the 60th anniversary of James Bond, released a new version of it, but because they don't want us, you know, have guns and toy guns, now it's a camera, like a spy camera. There's no bullets. Instead, they have the gold coins. So it's not quite the same. However, my source is in the Spy Museum, and actually it's on my sources at the Spy Museum, and well, not really just my sources, but also a podcast from SpyCast, Spy Museum's official podcast, had Andrew Hammond, who we've had on the show before, talk about various things they have in their collection. And they mentioned that they have one of these toys. And I talked to someone else in the museum. Not that they only have one, they have multiple.
All right, but what's the point of having them if you're not going to do anything with them?
Well, they want to display them. They're just very delicate. So they need to they're trying to figure out a way to do that. I'm also trying to find out if there's a way that I can get backstage and just not touched, but just see them. Because that's just...
Just let me see it, Spy Museum. Just let me see it.
Yes, it's the holy grail of James Bond toys. You know, like... All right, so that's the attaché case. Also, that AR's folding sniper's rifle that they had in the case is a real gun. You used to be able to purchase them pretty easily. I think they've stopped producing them, though, so now you have to search if you want to find one. I did also, there was an auction that went up for like a toy version that I missed out on. Next, we've got Call Me Bwana. So Call Me Bwana is a 1963 film starring Bob Hope and Anita Ekberg. It is the only film made by Eon Productions that was not about James Bond until 2014, when they made another That's film great. Called The Silent Storm.
That's great that it's an Eon Productions like in joke. Yeah.
I feel like I'm trying to remember what it was in the novel. I don't recall.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was not Call Me Bwana. It was something else. Oh, here it is, actually. It was his Marilyn Monroe's face in a poster for Niagara.
Okay, I could see that.
Yeah. All right, next I have... So the bedroom scene where Bond meets Tanya. For every James Bond after Connery, that's been the audition scene that they've had to do.
Even in our modern era?
Yes. Oh, yes. They've never released footage of any of the actual James Bonds, who people were cast doing it. They've released footage of like people who almost got it. I believe they've got Burt Reynolds doing it somewhere.
Wow, really?
Like on YouTube. Maybe. I know he was sought after for, I think it was for one of the, maybe it was for Roger Moore, before Roger Moore. Yeah,
you know, that's interesting. Hang on really quick, because Burt Reynolds was also considered for Han Solo, and his audition tapes are on YouTube.
Yeah, maybe it's not, but I know that there are other people whose auditions are on there. There's footage of Daniel Craig doing that audition, but we don't actually get to hear it. We just like it's in one of the documentaries about it. But yeah, so that going forward is the audition scene that every James Bond actor or potential James Bond actor has done.
Mm-hmm.
Now you covered most of what I was going to about honeypots, but there is one other little thing that according to former CIA, and this is from Wikipedia, according to former CIA officer Jason Matthews, the Soviet Union had a sex espionage school called State School 4, and they trained their female agents to be swallows. Now, you may recognize the name Jason Matthews. It's because he wrote the novel Red Sparrow, which became the movie Red Sparrow. And of course, in that, the name Swallows was changed to Sparrows. All right, and I've just got, a few more things. Chlorohydrate, which is what Red Grant uses to poison Tanya, was first used as a sedative and a hypnotic in Germany in the 1870s. Now, we also talked about this probably back in Living Daylights, where that's what Tanya. What was her name in Living Daylights?
I don't remember.
Oh, it's going to bug me. Well, that's what she used when she thinks that her boyfriend is... When James Bond gets the whole reveal of, James Bond is actually not her boyfriend's friend. Poisons him with that. Yeah. Red wine with fish.
Yes.
So, according to winepaths.com, generally speaking, a glass of white is the right way to go when eating fish. However, this rule does not apply to every and all occasions. The taste of the wine should never completely overwhelm and overshadow the food. Equally, the food should never overpower taste of the drink, as reds tend to be deeper and more richly flavored. Many write off the possibility of pairing it with fish. Hence the old saying, white wine with fish and red wine with meat. As an English gentleman in that era, you would not have done it now. People are more flexible on pairing wines. And lastly, we have a JFK connection with From Russia With Love. So part of the reason why this was chosen for the second film is because in March 1961, JFK listed From Russia With Love, the novel, as one of his 10 favorite books. It was the only nonfiction book to hit that list.
That's right. I think you only mean the only fiction one. But yeah.
Only fiction book. Thank you. Yes.
That's right.
And it was also the last film that Kennedy saw in the White House prior to his assassination in 1963.
Thanks. That makes sense.
So he was actually, it was also that that endorsement from Kennedy that really sort of bumped up the sales of the James Bond novel. So without Kennedy, we might not have that surge in sales. We might not have ever had a James Bond film series.
Yeah, it might be just like Jack Reacher.
But yeah, and then I guess what one thing that we do have to touch on is the actor for Karen Bay, Pedro Armendariz. He had cancer during this film, and he was in great pain throughout the filming, but reportedly, did it to ensure that his family had money after he died. So he had neck cancer, and then shortly after filming, he died by suicide.
Yes, I read that story somewhere. So I think I read that like he asked his wife to send him his like prize antique firearm or something and killed himself with that.
I know that
I don't know.
he that there
Yeah.
was a gun that was smuggled into the hospital. I don't know if that was the details. It could be
Oh,
true.
yeah, it could be, could be.
All right. So that's what I have for spy fact versus spy fiction.
Okay, next we have our favorite quotes. I have a few besides the one I said that I liked because it was so bad. So I can go
All right.
first.
Sure.
Another one I liked because it was so bad was he blows up the boats and then he says, "Where there's smoke, there's
No.
fire." I
It's
still.
not just that. He says there's a saying in England, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah.
That is also bad, yeah.
Yeah, they're. I mean, whatever. It's Bond. It's supposed to be bad, so
No, they're not supposed to be bad.
it's okay. Groaners. Anyway.
No, they're supposed to be amusing and entertaining. Those were just bad.
Yeah. So I
All
like
right,
when he says to
continue.
Grant. I like when he says to Grant, "It must be a pretty sick collection of minds to come up with a plan like that." It sounds like something Batman from the old TV show would say.
It does, yeah. All right, yeah.
I like when he says, "You sure didn't die of old age." About the a couple others. I did like when he says, "Mine call me James Bond," because I didn't know whether it was supposed to be funny or not. I thought it was kind of
Yeah.
funny.
Well, what was funny is when they awkwardly shake hands, with like, and her like trying to keep the sheet on her covering herself.
Right. Yeah. And then it's like that whole exchange and the way he said it was funny. When he's with Sylvia and they gets the call and she starts talking, he goes, "It's the office." And he actually sounds like kind of nervous about and like upset, which is so weird to see from James Bond. But then my absolute favorite line in the movie was about the two girls and they say, "You're going to resolve it, Bond." He says, "As if I didn't have enough problems." All right, how about you?
All right, so I've got a few. You took one of mine, with the where there's smoke, there's fire. I also like all my key employees are my sons. Blood is the best security in this business. From Grant, when he's telling Bond that, I'm not going to kill you slowly, is like, the first one won't kill you, not the second, not even the third, not till you crawl over here and kiss my foot.
Yeah, that was a little scary for me. I like the funny ones.
I also liked at when they're at the Romani camp, and like Karen Bay is translating everything, and then that they're saying, and then Bond at one at a certain point stops him and says, "Yes, I think I got it without the subtitles."
Oh yeah, right. That was great.
Yep. All right. Well, that's what I've got.
Right, so now it is time for our ratings on a scale of 1 to 10 martinis, 1 being Avengers 1997 and 10 being even better than Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. How would we rate From Russia with Love, the movie, not the game or the book?
All right, Zach, let's hear it.
So I thought it was quite good. Not amazing, but I thought it was quite good. I liked
All
how
right.
it was so different from other James Bond movies, how it was more of a traditional spy plot with scheming and the villains that are smart and they hold their fire and it's more like escaping. And the villain was scary. The love story was weak even by James Bond standards, which should tell you something. And I didn't love how all the action was backloaded at the end after the emotional climax and defeat of the villain. But they're still figuring it out, so that's okay. So I thought it was quite good. I will give it a 7.5 out of 10.
All right. So, obviously gonna go higher because it's me. This is one of my top three favorite James Bond films. I don't quite think it will get the 10 out of 10, but it will get up there. So, because, and you say, it is not your typical James Bond, yet it also sets so many of the trademarks that were not, like, were not apparent in Dr. No, like your Q scene, you've got the final henchman fight, you've got the, you know, scenes on trains, which is very much a James Bond staple. You've got killing, you know, the Spectre henchmen who fail. And then if you get the very first time, James Bond will return in next movie.
Mm-hmm.
And now this film is not only one of my favorites, it's also reportedly Sean Connery's favorite James Bond film. That's why he came back to do the video game. It's also Daniel Craig's favorite James Bond film. And, you know, it may not be the cookie cutter James Bond film, but we don't want every one of them to be that. And you want them to be different, to be exceptional. So I'm going to give this a 9 out of 10 martinis.
Very nice.
It's not all the way up there, but it's high up there, and it's really good.
I remember before we did the podcast, you were saying that you hadn't seen it in a long time, and you were wondering if it held up. So I guess it did.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it holds, like, you know, there was stuff where I was anticipating it, but there was other stuff where it's like, it's been a while since I seen it, so I actually forgot it. And I was pleasantly surprised by things.
Very nice.
Like, how much, like, I've forgotten how much Grant is there in the background. I really stuck out to me this time. I really enjoyed that.
Very nice. That is definitely different, which I appreciate.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. You can find us on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at our merch store as well at redbubble.com. Until next time, I'm Zach.
And I'm Christian.
And we are The Spy-Fi Guys, signing off.
Thank you for listening to The Spy-Fi Guys. If you enjoyed our podcast, please be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. The theme song from this podcast is Mistake the Getaway by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. Films, books, and television shows reviewed by our podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended.
This is a personal podcast. Any views, statements, or opinions expressed in this podcast are personal and belong solely to the participants. They do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the participants may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated. Any views or opinions are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, or individual.
You can find our podcast on social media at The Spy-Fi Guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.